Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classic.
We are recording.
Very good.
Yeah, sorry about that. My wife pulled her annual, I'm going to go hang out with my family weekend. They have like a girls weekend. And every time they do this, she says, I will be home by, you know, early afternoon on Sunday. I'm like, oh, okay. I'll schedule my, you know, podcast for 1:30, you know, normal time. And so I text her today. I'm like, so you still planning on being here around like 1 o'clock? And she goes, oh no, I won't be back till 4. Now, as myself would be normally like, oh, okay. But she does this every fucking year and I never catch on that she does this. It's like, I don't get it. Like, she just like, when it comes to her family, she loses all sense of time and responsibility. Like, and that's why I can't go, like, it's going to Thanksgiving with her is such a nightmare because she's like, oh, we'll be home by like 7 o'clock. And there I am at like 9 o'clock, like lying on the couch going,
Yes. And
anyway, that's my weekend so far. How's yours?
just fine. I am staying inside, social distancing as instructed.
You're not doing as instructor. You're doing as you want to do, which is to stay inside and not have any sort of social interaction. So let's not sugarcoat it, Steve.
Hey,
you're being responsible.
Hey. I finally get to be responsible doing what I want. I'm going to take it.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is don't try and you know, sugarcoat it that you're doing some sort of.
It's not sugarcoating it. I am doing what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah,
I also happen to want to do what I'm supposed to do.
That's what I'm saying. You're sugarcoating it, like you're acting like you're high and noble for social distancing. When in reality, you just would do that. You'd be doing this regardless.
It's not sugarcoating to state that I am doing something that I'm supposed to be doing, and I enjoy it.
I don't think, yeah, maybe sugarcoating is not the right way. Maybe it's like masking. That could be a way of saying it, like masking your social responsibility with actual.
Masking, that's funny.
Yeah, so and there you go. So that works in both ways.
We also have a masking joke. I like it.
Yeah, so Game Classy, as always, I'm your host, Joe, and with me is Steve. Steve, are you... how are you doing this weekend?
I'm just fine.
All right, then. Can you still hear me? Has my microphone changed at all?
No, you sound the same.
I just got a weird little pop-up message about, like, we're using this microphone. I'm like, what? What's going on? Huh? What? Eh? Huh? I'm infinitely too sleep-deprived to be making these decisions right now.
You know what? That's fair.
So. Yeah, I mean, not much in the way of news, actually, with gaming stuff going on. Have you heard anything big? Am I missing anything big?
No. There's nothing.
There's nothing. But I did want to talk that there's... finally, they're releasing the last two warbands of Season 3 of Beastgrave for Warhammer Underworlds. They're finally getting their release after being delayed for 4 months.
Yes.
You're getting some orcs. And some witch elves. Well, I don't know if witch elves. I think
they're daughters of Cain now. Actually,
daughters of Cain is what they're called now. Okay,
yes.
Otherwise known as orcs and witch elves.
Yes.
They previewed all the cards for them, and the orcs are really good. I'm really kind of shocked at how good they made the orcs, considering that the last orc set was kind of shitty. I mean, not bad, but it was good.
The last Orc Warband was, if you played it as it was designed, it was not very good. If you played it in the stall format, it was the best Warband.
Yeah, they nuked it after like a month though, right? Like they changed a lot of that up.
Well, they did bans and stuff, and like the stall became like, basically once the rotation happened, it was kind of it. Although actually I don't even know if they were, yeah, they rotated, didn't they? I don't know. They did some shit. I stopped paying attention.
Well, all of their season one cards have now rotated out. At the beginning of season three, all the season one cards rotated out.
Okay, so there you go.
Yeah, so all the season one warbands are still able to be used, but you can't use any season one generic cards.
Right.
That's the way that the rotation works. And I was actually reading something fairly interesting about how or why GW is doing Warhammer Underworld the way it is. And like the way that they do a lot of their smaller games is that basically what they're doing is they're testing release formats and seeing which ones work the best for their company. So Warhammer Underworlds is basically their version of a collectible card game. And right. if they, and doing a rotation schedule and things like that, and they test out if they want to do this for any other games based upon how well Underworld sells.
Right.
Yeah. And so
that makes sense to me. Yeah,
it does. And you know, I like it. I think it's kind of fun. I like playing collectible card games. I haven't done it for a long time because I kind of feel like to upkeep with them is miserable.
Well, it depends. Like we're gonna talk collectible card games. The only one that actually matters is Magic. Like if we're talking Magic, and like keeping up with Magic is, if you play every format, like if you play all the versions of Magic that are available, you better be extraordinarily wealthy. Like that's really it. Like you just there's no ifs, ands, or buts on that one. So yeah. if you want to play casually here and there, then you know it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
With like Cardfight Vanguard, you can play one clan and then your upkeep is question mark because you don't know how often it's going to be how often your clan is going to come out, and it's way less frequent than Magic because Magic is a release every like 3 months period. But Vanguard, they release like every month or every other month, but you are only playing one aspect of the game. So like you ignore most of the releases. Mm. So that's a thing that does matter, you know? So if like, if your clan gets updated twice in a year, that means that you need to buy cards twice in a year, which is way less than any other card game.
Yeah. I mean, what I like about Underworlds is that, you know, every month or two you throw down 30 bones and you get some cool figures that you can choose to paint or choose not to paint. And you get all of the expansion cards for essentially that month, which is great. That's what I would prefer, as opposed to you got to drop a hundred or how much does a box of Magic cost now? Like $200?
Well, I mean, the Magic boxes sell for $100. Mm-hmm. That's like, there is no cost to Magic boxes. They're just whatever is sold, and that's what they sell for. So
yeah, I didn't know what the appreciation of value has been. I remember,
yeah, because they actually got rid of the MSRP for Magic. Like it's just gone. So it's whatever people are selling it for, and it's basically $100.
Because I remember buying if I bought like a card box, if I was buying Magic back in the day, like late 90s, like 99, 2000, it would be like about $60 to $75 for a box, if I remember correctly.
But then also importantly, very importantly, there is a, there's the thing with Magic where you can just buy singles.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Like, you know, it all depends on, you know, what you're trying to, like, if you're trying to maintain a competitive standard deck, you're going to spend, let's say every set, you'll spend, I'd say, just on average, $200. Like, that's probably about how much you're going to spend if you're trying to stay competitive with a standard deck. So it's actually not that bad. If you're buying boxes to rip, then, you know, it's all over the place. And then sometimes you'll spend a little bit more, sometimes you'll spend a little bit less. Because, like, if a set comes out and it doesn't have, you know, a ton of really high-value playable cards, like, if the mythics in the set are all not good, that's the highest level of rarity. If the mythics are not very good, then you'll be able to buy all of the best cards for next to nothing because the rares will be cheap. And then, I mean, it's not that bad. But, like, I mean, I would say you probably spend less than people spend on Warhammer. Unless you're, like, trying to maintain being competitive with multiple formats. And always staying as competitive as possible. That's the other
thing. In a season, I think a season of Warhammer Underworld's base box is, how much is the base box? Is it $50? 60. It's 60.
Yeah, it's 60 for the base, and then it's 35 per each warband, I believe.
Yeah, 35 per warband, so you're 6 warbands.
They do 6 warbands, so it's basically $300 after tax.
Yeah, $300 for a season of Warhammer Underworlds. Not bad, and you get a bunch of figures, too, and all that stuff. I don't see it as much as a loss so much as it's fun. I like I also like pack ripping, though, don't get me wrong. There's weird serotonin hits that you get in the brain once you rip it open packs.
That's why the real masters of the game just draft.
Yeah.
Because if you just draft, you get to rip packs and you get to play competitively, you keep what you rip, and so that way you don't miss out on the feeling of the pack ripping. And in addition to that, if you rip, you know, a super rare card, you just take it.
Yeah. You get that nice little like chemical release in your brain whenever you open up a pack, right.
and then if you
look at the last card in the pack.
And then if you win the draft, you get even more packs.
That's true. But then you have to like figure out how to do that, and I don't have time.
It's really not that hard. Like the nice thing about drafting is that once you understand what you should do in a draft, like the general rules of how drafting works, like what you should be doing, it basically kind of just works for any draft ever.
Yeah.
Because like the basic rules are always kind of going to be the same. It's like, you always want this kind of card. This is the kind of mana cost you're looking for. You know, you're not trying to go over this or over that. It's fairly simple.
But this goes back to an earlier point you made. Cardfight Vanguard is still around.
Yeah, it still is.
Yeah, is it doing okay?
Does it need help? it's existing in its little universe. It's like, I mean, no game is the big three. Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, and Magic are, you know, for all intents and purposes, untouchable. The one game that had a shot was Force of Will, and due to just massively mishandling the game, it did not, you know.
Yeah.
That's just how that was. But that game, that was the only game that ever had a shot. Like, that game's, the response was ludicrous. Not only was the response ludicrous, but like the amount of people playing in like essentially Grand Prix level tournaments for that game were frankly just fucking absurd. There's really no other way to put that. So with that being said, you know, it's kind of over for, you know, any other card game. But Weiss Schwartz and Cardfight Vanguard, they're still kicking it, man.
that Cardfight Vanguard. You know, I still go to Games Workshop. Whenever I go to Games Workshop store, I still will always inevitably say to the manager, do you guys sell Pokemon cards here? You just mentioned that, and I'm just like, I think to myself, like, I do that far too often. It's like dad jokes where you're like, when you meet another, when a dad meets another dad and he goes, what's up, tough guy? They let you in here? You know, like that sort of thing.
Yes.
Where it's like inevitable that you're going to say that. It's inevitable for me when I walk into a Games Workshop store to say, do you guys sell any Pokemon cards here?
I'm sure. Well, I guess that's not quite as autopilot as someone working like in like a poop job where you say like, I bet your job's real shitty. Something like those lines. Everyone who does that, they think they're very clever.
Waste management.
Yes, waste management.
And by that I mean the mob, because anytime someone says they work in waste management, that means they're working with the mafia.
That's true.
I know that's not necessarily true, but that's what.
No, it's true. It is. I would be supposed to say it is necessarily true.
It's true. Everything is mafia related. How come I'm not in the mafia? God damn it.
I don't know. Why aren't you?
Because I don't think I fit well in a tracksuit.
Okay.
I would like to wear a tracksuit. I just can't do it. I don't know. I'm very Slavic. I'm Polish. I should be able to like do the Slav squat, but just don't got it in me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
I think it's because I'm too top heavy. You know, I got too much weight up top to pull off the tracksuit.
Maybe I'll pull off the tracksuit someday.
Yes. Well, I think that's a dream of every man, is to pull off the tracksuit. Quick question. I saw this the other day when I was putting my notes together for the episode. Marvel Champions by Fantasy Flight. You seen this?
I mean, no, I don't think so.
No, it's they got a game out called now called Marvel Champions, the card game. I wanted to know if it was anything like Warhammer Champions.
Okay.
I don't know. That's what I was asking you. I was you're normally the one who has the answers in this.
No, it wouldn't be because that's that game engine is all done by PlayFusion, so I doubt it unless they licensed the mechanics out to Asmodee, which I guess is not impossible. It's probably just a name. Mm. Champions is a very common fucking name.
I would assume so. That's what I was kind of like. I was kind of wondering about that because I'm like, well, Warhammer Champions kind of, I think it's dying out.
I will take one quick second to look. No, it is not.
Okay.
Like, all you need to do is look at the card. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say because I know that game is not dead. It's just kind of, you know, not as prevalent as it was. And, you know, whenever I see something by like Fantasy Flight Asmodee puts out, I'm like, wait a second, there's no way they would have licensed that, even though they did technically license Wings of War. But don't they own Wings of War now?
No, I think Ares still owns Wings of War.
Yeah. And that would probably be the original engine that they own as well.
Yes.
Mm. Interesting.
So unless they bought I guess they could have bought the engine to the game. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was licensed, but I don't know. Actually it probably wasn't licensed. It was probably something they probably like, I don't know, paid some kind of fucking finder's fee. I don't know how to properly explain what they likely did. Because if it's licensed, that would mean that the license could expire and
exactly.
Then they wouldn't be able to make the game anymore. So it might not be like a basic licensing thing. It could be something different. It could be like we paid to use this game, you know, engine in fucking perpetuity, or whatever.
You think there might be something like that? It could be. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, it's possible.
It's a little unusual, but
I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know.
Honestly, don't care that much.
Yeah. That's also accurate.
Well, I mean, because I want to play some sweet biplane action. So I.
Yes, we all want to play with our biplanes.
As we've said, we're gonna go to Adepticon next year in a full biplane outfit. You know, with their goggles and their leather caps and leather jackets and the big silk scarves, and be like, "Wait, here for the X-wing tournament." I have brought my Sopwith camel.
I have my Fokker.
Oh, Steve, you definitely are the Fokker of the group.
How droll.
Bully.
Yes, I'll say bully. How dare you speak to me in this manner? Why, I'd say that'd be worthy of fisticuffs. I guess the kind of big news, Steamforged Games revealed their epic proportions, epic encounters set for minis. They're like a box set that's like a whole, like, not quite a dungeon in a box, but a full fight in a box. So like, ooh. They have the first two, there's the Shrine of the Kobold Queen, which inside that box, it has two Firebrand Assassins, a Kobold Matron, Priest of the Bloody Flame, Kobold Champion, Basilisk Handler, Basilisks, and so on and so forth. You know, a bunch of goons. And then they have a Lair of the Red Dragon as well, which they have not disclosed all of the contents within. But I think it's sounding like it's just going to be a giant-ass dragon. Like, that's going to be because, I mean, what else would you put in the fucking box? But it comes with, they're all unpainted, but it comes with everything you need to run it. So it comes with like a little like mat, and like it has like an like, you know, area, like terrain as you were. It's not terrain, but a game board.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm looking at the figures now. They're actually pretty cool. I like the dwarven females. Those are nice, and the weird Japanese looking goblins.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are pretty sweet. I mean, everything. Yeah, it looks like really nice. And you know, actually, I'm glad that you mentioned it because I did mark down Steamforged as ending Guild Ball. Guild Ball is dead.
Wow. It only took them what, 2 years to catch up to that game actually dying?
6 years, actually. The game came out in 2014. It's now 2020, and it is dead.
Well, I mean, it has been dead for 2 years. So saying it was alive.
Really?
Yeah, it was. There was that awkward period of time where the War Machine players were quitting War Machine and Hordes, but then they were looking for another game to play, and they didn't want to go back to Workshop.
Yeah, I mean, so Guild Ball was very popular. Every time I went to Gen Con, there was always lines over at the booth to play or for the Guild Ball stuff.
Yeah, and that, because that was the period of time where they were dropping War Machine and Hordes, and then they were shifting and looking for a new game, so they all went to Guild Ball. After a certain period of time, they had to accept reality that the game that they were going to play was going to be Warhammer, and they have now all returned to Warhammer or Warhammer 40,000.
That's true.
That's just fucking how it is.
But actually, in speaking of sports ball games, did you see the previews for Blood Bowl Season 2?
I saw the box. That's all I saw.
It actually pretty interesting. I've always liked Blood Bowl. I mean, I can't. It's not like a game that I absolutely hate. It's a fine game. It's
I don't have a problem with Blood Bowl. I just think from what I understand, Blood Bowl is a game where you have extremely tight and planned out tactics, and you lose because the other guy rolled a six. it's going back to what we said in the last cast. Like, it is the ultimate version of that game that I was talking about, where like you'll come up with the best strategy, you'll be the best player, and you'll just lose because the other guy rolled a six.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what you have to go into when you're playing Blood Bowl. Like, you can't. It's not one of those games where you could try and or. I think that's the whole kind of appeal of the game, is that you can't stack anything. Your teams are relatively set. You know, you can't like, I'm going to do this and this and this and this to make my team the penultimate team possible for Blood Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't really, you could do some of that stuff. Like, I'm going to put in an extra catcher, you know, like just in case, but it's no matter what you're going to do, you're not going to have like an ultimate build, you know, like, you can maybe do that, but it doesn't matter because the dice rolls are all going to be so shitty or so good that you're going to win or lose depending on your dice rolls. So like you could, it's one of those games where you just kind of, it's an ultimate beer and pretzels game. You don't, it's not a game for Steve because Steve cannot, you know, min-max the team enough that he can compensate for the dice rolls. It doesn't work.
Yes, there's nothing. There's nothing I can do. Because rest assured, if you've ever played against me in a miniatures game, you will know. You will find out that you may not believe that luck is an actual thing, but it turns out it is real, and mine is very bad.
Yeah, I definitely have seen people whose dice rolls are just atrocious, and it's not just bad for that game, like they are consistently bad across the board, multiple game systems.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. One of the things that is the funniest, possibly like the funniest story I have related to luck in RNG is definitely I can't remember this other dude's name. Nathan. Nathan and Giuseppe, actually, they both, you know, played a lot of 40K, and that's, you know, they met playing Games Workshop and so on and so forth. And Giuseppe has, I would say, the opposite of my luck, where like, he just like, just if he needs three sixes, like he's not going to do it every time, but man, he will roll three sixes when you least expect it. And you're just like, what the fuck? Like, that's absurd. Like, he has the most, like, he plays orcs in 40K and his missiles, they don't miss. Like, they just fucking hit. Like, it's like, yeah, I need fives. All three hit. that's kind of how it goes with him. So anyway, and Nathan has the same story, but he's me, where he just has absolutely fucking horrible luck. So he would play against Giuseppe in 40K, and he would play, he had the newest army. It was like, it was like basically a top tier list, and Giuseppe was playing orcs. So like, Giuseppe should have been washed, and like, they would play every week, and Giuseppe would just throttle him. Just absolutely, because he'd make every save, he'd fucking hit with every rocket, and like Nathan would roll like for like Terminators, like he'd roll like five saving throws for Terminators, and all five would be ones, like that kind of thing, you know. So horrible. And then one time, like Nathan, like was like, he's like, he got super mad. He's just like, this is fucking horrible. He's like, you know what? Next game we play, you're gonna roll my dice for me. And Giuseppe was like, okay. So then Giuseppe rolled Nathan's dice for him, and Nathan absolutely wiped the he tabled Giuseppe with Giuseppe making the dice rolls for Nathan. Nathan tabled Giuseppe.
Does not surprise me.
Which I thought was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in tournaments too where I've seen people with hot dice, and I've often wondered about how cooked their dice are. Like where I've seen them roll those specific dice, and I'm just like, I almost want to say like, you need to roll different dice.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, there is definitely one dude who actually got caught cooking dice.
Yeah.
I can't remember what his fucking name was, but like legit, like they caught him. Like they were like, you microwaved these dice. And he's like, yeah.
That does not surprise me, but
yeah. So that happened, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah. That's why I think I've said this on the cast before, but that all tournaments need to supply basic, you know, dice pool for each table playing.
I think that's fine. Or you just have to roll the same dice, or one player rolls. So like, I'm fine with one player rolls, but I know a lot of people would like be like, oh, I like to roll my own dice.
That's how I am. I wouldn't want people rolling my dice.
If that's the case, then if you can't do one player makes all rolls, then you would just all roll the same dice.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think. Just give them like a nice little dice pool, and that's what you're rolling off of.
Yeah. So I mean, you can roll the same dice. That is a thing. And I believe that would be fine.
Yeah. Or you get like some nice casino dice. Yes. Casino dice are the best.
Yes, we do like casinos. Unfortunately, the amount of dice you need to roll in any game of Warhammer immediately makes the prospect of casino dice not going to happen.
Well, especially because casino dice are A, heavy, and B, have very sharp corners.
They're also just huge.
Yeah, they're huge. Like, I mean, they're not that bad.
You need to roll 30 dice, they're fucking huge.
Rolling two in the hand feels okay. I mean, if you roll more than four, it's gonna clunk. So yeah, that's not the best. I like how this. I'm looking at the Steamforge site with their announcement that they're canceling Guild Ball,
mm-hmm.
and it goes through this big long thing about like the birth of Guild Ball, the road to Kickstarter, a wild ride. I mean, I will give it to them. I like the idea that they had Guild Ball. It lasted for 6 years, and they're ending it. They're not, like, trying to drag it out.
Yes. Yeah.
And keep it going.
There's certainly something to be said for, you know, just actually, what is it? I guess sucking it up.
Yeah.
Is that the right term? Because, I mean, like, the thing is, like, it takes a little while for the manufacturer of the game to start really feeling the pain, as it were, because it always goes manufacturers sell to distributors, and only Games Workshop really does direct now, but it's like manufacturers sell to distributors sell to stores. So when a game dies, usually the first people who get stuck with a ton of product are your distributors,
mm-hmm.
because you have a bunch of distributors, like they get this stuff in and they're like, I can't sell this now, it's dead, your game is fucking dead. So with that being the case, you know, it takes a little bit for the manufacturer, like, oh, our last thing didn't sell. So then when they try to resolicit for the next wave of product, the distributors are like, no, I don't want that. And then they're like, oh, okay. So there is a bit of a lag, I would say, for when games should be canceled and should be not. But the other thing too, that's because most manufacturers just refuse to, like pay any sort of attention to their game outside of their just, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe what they're doing, because they're not doing a good job. Like just in general. And that's just in general with any game. They're just like, it's like, how do you like, you know, like Privateer Press, like if they said, like, if they were to say like, we had no idea that War Machine was doing so bad. It's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like anybody with a brain knows how good or bad the game's doing. And then then of course there's the other factor where we as the consumer and public don't actually 100% know, other than, you know, seeing our local game stores or, you know, the people we talk to on whether or not a game is super healthy, because the amount of information available for game sales is generally provided to news sites by distributors. So for all I know, there's a secret cabal of War Machine and Hordes players that have been actively playing the game for an extremely long time that I just don't know about because they've been buying it straight from Privateer Press's website.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and that's their own fault for playing War Machine Hordes. Something else that Games Workshop actually dropped recently. Excuse me, just one second. Ooh. They finally showed the starter set for 9th edition. It doesn't have a name, but they have the Command Edition, the Elite Edition, and the Recruit Edition.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah. So for, you know, 50 bones, you get the Recruit Edition, which basically has a squad of Primaris, a squad of Necrons, a Necron leader, it actually looks like you get two squads of Necrons, one with the single blaster, one with the double blaster. I don't know if those are together or separate. And then you get some Scarab Swarms. And then you get, like, the leader dude with a shield and blah, blah, blah. And it's $50, and you get all that, you know, the rule sheet and whatever on there. Mm-hmm. But if you want to spend, not 65, because that's in British dollar reduce. For $100, you get the bikes added in and a couple extra units.
Oh, so, I know you're jumping on that. I know you love the bikes.
I love the bikes. The most inspired figure that ever got resculpted was those motorcycles. Because, you know, everything in the Primaris, you know, 7th or 8th edition of 40K has all been about wheels and yes. how fast everything drives on wheels.
Yes. That's the Primaris aesthetic. Wheels.
It's the Primaris aesthetic. Jason the Wheeled Warriors. And
Turbo
then,
Team. Yeah. See now I want a Turbo Team, but it's a Space Marine. And he turns into a Rhino.
I'm sure at some point Games Workshop designers will be like, I'm gonna make a Rhino that transforms into a Dreadnought. We're gonna do that. And then they'll have that on the battlefield and everyone, they'll make rules for it and everyone will be like, wow, okay, I guess because it's good, I'll get it.
Yeah, it's like that's like when they had the Papoose Grey Knight thing.
The Dread Knight.
Yeah, the Dread Knight Papoose. Like that was, you know, everyone was all in on that.
As I say, it's the problem is not Games Workshop, the problem is Games Workshop's like design team. Because they don't care about anything having to do with the armies. Like, you know what Space Marines really need? Space Marines need this type of flyer. Let's make this type of flyer. Design team's like, I took a Space Marine and put him inside of a Space Marine.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, great. Let's make rules for this piece of shit that no one will ever use. We'll make it the best thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, I always wonder, because like I thought for a moment it might be like the worse the model, the better the rules. But then I kind of had to go like, no, because the Dragon Ogres, the new Dragon Ogres were not great, but their rules were also not great. Minotaurs. The Minotaurs are still a very maligned model kit, and their rules are not good.
Yeah, it's but they're also a little older at this point.
Because I had to think about it real quick, because when the Dragon Ogres were, if I remember correctly, when the Dragon Ogres were their absolute best, competitive wise, they were still the goofiest, the goofy metal models with their tongue sticking out.
Yep, I love those models too. I think they were great.
So that was when they were best competitively.
But you can also buy the Command Edition, which is basically for $65 more, you get everything in the Elite Edition, but you get terrain with it as well. So, yeah. So for 165 bones, that's kind of like the Command Edition is the 9th edition starter set. It's like what we talk about with Games Workshop experimenting with different ways to sell things. Like, how are they going to make the most amount of money?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this method quite that much. Of like three different level sizes to the starter boxes. It seems kind of silly to me. I like the theme. Island of Blood, you know, where you get, these are the figures that you will play in Island of Blood. Here's the scenarios that you could play with it. This is what you can go for it. Like, I like that. I like having that theme to it.
Nope. This is for This is for different point of sale budgets. That's all it is. It's like that tiny one, that recruit edition, that's going to be in Barnes and Noble for sure.
Oh, probably.
Like that is absolutely where you're going to see that.
They got a bunch of new Barnes and Noble games coming out too.
And then you're going to see probably the Elite Edition will probably be, you know, your average game store is going to be Elite Edition or Command Edition. Yeah. I mean, everyone's probably going to get all three. That's the thing too. Like having a cheaper entry point. I did like the design of having like the story for like Battle for Skull Pass and so on and so forth, but like they don't want to keep the value at the price point needed to be. So you need a cheaper box to get someone to play the game.
Like, that's very true. You generally do at some point.
Like it is like if the what'd you say, the recruit edition is $50?
Yeah.
Okay, so me and my buddy can start playing for $30 each. Like that seems fine. Because I mean we're gonna need a little, you know, some money for glue. Like so $10 we can
play. No, sir. They are push fit.
Are they push fit?
Yeah.
Damn.
So like you could do like the standard like 12-year-old who gets out their pair of scissors that they have at their desk and they that's what they're using to clip the models out of the sprue.
Yes.
You know, and then they're push fitting them together. And then they're gonna battle their mans.
Yes, perfect.
And then it's like you have the one guy who's like, I'm gonna play the Necrons, I'm gonna play the Space Marines. All right, how many Necrons do you have? I have 3, 7, 10, 14. How many guys do you got? 6.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, granted, the Space Marines are probably infinitely better than the Necrons, but it's still like when you're getting that recruiting the kids into it, it's like I'd rather take all of the spoopy skeleton guys there's a lot of them as opposed
to... I found that it was never the case when like the kids were actually buying the 40K starters. Like they did not care what, like it was rare that a kid would be like, I prefer the one that has more guys. Like in most cases, they would be like, I want the Space Marines. And the other kid would be like, but I want the Space Marines.
Space Marines.
Yeah, like I didn't find that to be the case at all. Like kids don't apply that kind of logic. Like they don't apply like there's more, so I want this one because it's a better cash value for dollars spent towards miniatures got. They just go like this is cooler. I want the thing that is cooler.
So
if the kid thinks the Space Marines are cooler, they're gonna want the Space Marines. Doesn't matter how many they get.
Which reminds me of the latest kind of a social. Angering that Games Workshop has had. Have you read some of the articles that have been out lately about Games Workshop?
I have not read any of the angering, no.
So like the one I just read recently, which is pretty interesting, was talking about how Games Workshop is shifting the dynamic of Warhammer 40K away from the fascist pastiche that it was, so that they are trying to align so that humans are the good guys in this big galaxy of horror and trying to really tone down the humanity grimdark.
Okay.
Because it sells better and they can market it better. And that's leaving a lot of people very, very upset about their, about my grimdark.
Huh. I have not heard this. I'm sure that the articles written are fucking insufferable.
Very much so. Cause it's about toys and you're just kind of like, It's the toys that neither you nor I play with, but we like to make fun of. So it does work to that favor. But basically, yeah, it's like Space Marines are no longer, you know, grimdark tactical porn. They are, you know, angelic saviors of humanity, you know, that sort of thing. So we can sit there and be like, you know, Space Marines used to be a fascist metaphor for the Thatcher government, and
this all sounds like fucking propaganda by the Imperium,
aka Great Britain,
also known as the Imperium. Yes.
Yeah. Beans on toast for everyone. Beans on toast for everyone.
God no.
I'm gonna make some fried bread, Steve. You want some fried bread?
In hushed whispers, I hear the beans being slathered on the toast, and I get upset.
Did you know about the fried bread? I don't remember if we talked about that before.
You mean toast?
No. Fried bread, not toasted bread. It's where they actually take bread and they put it in a pan and fry it.
So grilled cheese?
Kind of like a grilled cheese, but they don't put cheese on it. It's just bread.
So it's just a grilled.
Yeah, it's a grilled, yes.
It's a grilled.
But it's not grilled, it's fried, because when you're technically a grilled cheese is fried, it's not really grilled.
That's true, but we all call it grilled cheese.
Yes, I mean.
So we're going to call it a grilled.
Yes. Yeah, and we call stuff that goes on a ship cargo, but stuff that goes in a car shipment.
A Royale with cheese.
A Royale with cheese. You want to know what a fucking quarter pound is?
That's right. It's a Royale with cheese.
My car gets 40 rods to the hogshead, and that's the way I like it. That's what I'm But yeah, that's currently one of the bigger issues with. I love seeing Games Workshop, like their 40K, like seeing 40K get torn apart by both sides of these arguments. It just makes me laugh on every level. Like
to me, it's just like, why is like who? I don't know. It's like I don't get the deep lore people in any game. Like there are people who are like that about Magic. Like they're super like into the deep lore of Magic. And I'm just like, what? Like the deep lore is what's the fucking best card in the set so I can buy it.
Like, that's the most Steve answer that's possible.
Yeah. I mean, that's that for me, that's the deepest lore. The deepest lore is what's the fucking best card so I can buy it. That's the deep lore.
Well, and like, you know, Magic has a lot of books that came out, you know, Magic that are about the Magic universe, but 40K has so many books.
Yeah, I mean, Magic's not close to the black library level, but there used to be I obviously, you know, they're not anymore because they don't have fat packs, but the fucking there used to be, if a set came out, there was a new book for a new Magic book. Like every set it had a companion book. Like that was a thing that happened when a Magic set came out. It was like, you got the new set, you got the new cards, you got the new novel about the set. Like that was how it was. Yeah. I know that there still are a lot of lore books for Magic. I don't know how many there are, but now there's the additional deepest lore crossovers with D&D, because there's the Magic D&D world supplement books. There's the Mythic Odysseys of Theros and the Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica. And no doubt there will be like an Innistrad one, because Strahd is super popular. So having the Magic version of Curse of Strahd sounds pretty no brainer to me.
Yep. Well, that's what I'm saying, is like there's so much actual lore of 40K that's contradictory too. I mean, this is not like lore that's supposed to be taken word for word, because it's impossible. You can't do that. It's like
it's just like comic books. Like it breaks down. Like once you're reading something that has switched who's writing it multiple times, like, I mean, it's over. Like there's no way to keep that fucking shit straight. Like it's just done. Like that's fine. Like I don't care. Like that's it too. Like the thing is they trained people to people have been trained, whether intentionally or accidentally, to just like be extraordinarily into consistency and canon. And for all intents and purposes, because of that, like the actual reaction to people's obsession with canon is reboots, because they're like, this is fucking like, it's like, this thing's been going on for so long. We just have to reboot it at this point, because we don't want to try and keep fucking 70 years of this product property straight. So we're just going to reboot it. So people get all butt mad about reboots. And it's like, well, you know, they probably wouldn't reboot it, except that you'd be like, well, there's no possible way that Clan and Vagina would have been able to counter Fartman the Battle Lord in this instance, because in the third novel spin-off series, Fartman Strikes, Fartman the Battle Lord encountered a infernal scar beast that infected him with toxin, and he almost died, but Fartman managed to pull through, and the toxin inundated his body, rendering him completely immune to all poisons. So are you trying to tell me that didn't happen, and that suddenly this poison is just better than any other poison?
I wonder if...
So that's why reboots exist.
Yeah. But I do like your point, what you said about like how somehow we've been trained to look for logical consistency in our fictional stories, or like a through line, so to speak. Like we don't like it when stuff contradicts itself. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how far that goes back. Like if you could trace that back to like when the original shamans were like putting together mythologies, you know, and shit like that. And they're like, you could see some Greek, you know, wearing like a a fucking cow skull going like, no, no, Archimedes, we can't actually have Zeus have sex with this person because at the same time he was having sex with this person. So we can't really have that story. We're going to take that out.
I'm going to answer that definitively. And there's no way you're going to be able to argue that my answer is incorrect. People didn't live long enough for that to matter.
Oh yeah, I mean,
because anyone who would have been able to figure out there was an inconsistency in the story, they're dead and their kids are probably dead.
Could be, I mean, they actually did have like the diet of worms. I think that's what it was, the diet of worms, where they went through the Bible and were just like, nah, we're gonna take this part out. We're gonna take this part out. This part doesn't work for us. We don't like this part. That's where they took out all of the super crazy angel shit, like that you find in the Enochian Gospels.
Oh, where like the angels are like made of like spheres and stuff. And like,
yeah, that's the stuff that like the crazy bearded zealots were like screaming out in the desert about and he had a flaming sword, and that flaming sword had six eyes, and the six-eyed flaming sword came forth and said, "Please lick my butthole."
Yeah, well, there's no way that Christianity could be allowed to be cool.
Not at all.
That's just a rule. That's just an established thing.
And that's where they had the big argument about Job, where it's like, should we leave the book of Job in? Because there's a lot of weird shit in the book of Job that kind of contradicts a lot of the other stuff in the Bible. And the guy was like, I'll allow it. And so that's how we got the fact that the devil's hanging out with God up in heaven making bets about Job. So...
yes. Yeah. I mean, if we're going to talk contradiction, and actually, you know what, I would be so bold as to say, speaking of looking for contradiction, I think that there's a whole shit ton of people who never bothered with that because, like, for example, you know, Genesis happens twice, like in the same fucking book, like the world is made and everything is made all together. And then the next time the world is made and then just a dude is made, one man, like same book, double origin story back to back. Like,
well, yeah, it's like it's 3 pages later that happens. It's not even like a different chapter. It's literally like 2 pages in.
Yeah, it's like the universe is made, and then the universe is made again in a different way.
You know who writes a logically consistent backstory to all of it, to their mythology? Tolkien.
It's true. Yeah. Tolkien stuff is ironclad.
It's ironclad. You know what? I'm gonna start worshiping the elves. That's what it comes down to.
I mean, you could ascribe to the Church of Tolkien, which is his belief system is very strange. He's the only way I can explain it is that he is an anarcho-monarchist. That's the only way you can politically describe Tolkien, because he hated Nazis. Fucking hated Nazis, but he also was not a huge fan of like governmental overreach. He hated war. He hated war machines. You know, he famously said at the end of World War II, he's like, there was no real winner in the war. The only thing that has won this war is the machines. Like the killing machines are what have won this war. So I was like, damn, this fucking Terminator is shit. Yes, exactly. So he also was like, so he was pretty anti-government, like, you know, he wanted, but he liked, you know, he was anti like government overreach and things like that. But he was, you know, he was supportive of social programs like welfare and that kind of thing. Yeah. But then to also like make it additionally odd, he was super into monarchy. Like, that dude was definitely into the divine right of kings.
That dude was definitely into the divine right of kings.
I mean, he was. Like, there's no other way to this. There's no other way to make that statement. Like, he literally was. So I don't know. Weird guy.
I wonder how he'd feel that the Queen Elizabeth was still alive right now. He'd probably actually dig it.
Oh yeah, he'd be super. Like I said, he was super into the monarchy. He felt that the monarchy was the most just way to rule.
He would have gotten his knighthood, and then he would have been like, "I asked the queen for three for a strand of her hair. She gave me three.
No, she gave me none."
You think that's the queen's real hair? Or you think that's a wig?
I'm pretty sure that's a wig.
I think questioning that in actual Great Britain is like a booting offense.
They give you the boot.
They're going to give you the boot. At least in Australia, they'll give you the boot.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess that happens.
But anyway, getting back to some gaming stuff, I wanted to talk about Blood Bowl just a second. The second season actually is looking pretty good. I'm like, there's some rules leaks that are coming out of it, and it's not very different than the original Blood Bowl, because the original Blood Bowl rules are pretty solid for what they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you say, it's a goofy game that relies a lot on luck for dice rolls.
Yes.
But if that's what you're looking for in a game, it's fairly solid.
Yes, it would stand unrivaled. If what you're looking for is Blood Bowl, it stands unrivaled.
Blood Bowl stands unrivaled. And the funny thing, too, is that Blood Bowl, out of any game Games Workshop has done probably in the last 10 years, has some of the best sculpted figures out of any range that they've done.
Oh, they look phenomenal. But you know what? They're I'd say that they're on par with the warbands for Shadespire, which are also phenomenal. The skeletons are fucking great. And it's because they're allowed to make single pose. It's single pose models. Single pose models can look incredible. And Workshop has the best sculptors in the industry, like by and large. So when you actually give them the ability to go ham and make a single pose figure, of course they're going to produce something incredible.
Well, all Games Workshop stuff now is single pose. They don't do multi-pose. Anything new coming out is not going to be multi-pose. The only thing that's they're going to do different for that is they will have alternate pieces so that you can change it up. So like, let's
say multi-part. That's what I mean. Like,
yeah, no, but even still, like, they're not multi-part. Like, the guy is still a single pose, but they might have like a different hand that switches out a weapon. That's different. Like, it's much different than it was back in the day, where it was like legs, torso, arm, head, backpack, weapon, blah.
But that was only Marines. Like most of the other figures were a little less.
I don't know, man.
A little less in pieces like the Marines were.
I mean, even like Beastmen models, which are still currently used, the Gores, are still torso, legs. You can switch out the head, you switch out the arms. Like,
yes,
those are four pieces. Most newer models that are coming out are not even close to that. They're just literally, well, they might be two or three pieces, but they all glue together to form one monopose pose.
I guess I haven't built any of the brand newest new stuff to be able to counter this statement, because the newest things I built was the second wave of Nurgle stuff when they did the Great and Clean Ones and stuff, and they were the same thing, where like they were in the same pose.
Yeah.
But there was a ton of fucking pieces.
Yeah. Usually with the bigger sets like that, everything's going to be in the same pose. So you have like four greater Great and Clean Ones, and they're all different, but they're all kind of in the same pose. So there's a big similarity to them in the actual when you have them out on the table. Like, yeah, the heads might be slightly different, but you can't like pose the head to look in a different way. Or like with the hand, if the hand's got a sword, you can't really move the arm so that it's swinging up as opposed to, you know, out to the side or something like that.
Right.
That doesn't exist anymore like it used to with Games Workshop. They kind of moved away from it in 8th edition. At the tail end of 8th is when that started going away. And then for Age of Sigmar, it's gone now at this point. Like, you're not... all of those multi-pose, anything that's coming out that's new is not going to be like very poseable, so to speak. It's yes, there's options, but it's not a poseable option, if that makes sense.
Well, when I say poseable, I'm generally referring to like multi-parts, because if we go by that logic, technically like the Space Marines were always monopose as well, because their arms, you could make their arms higher or lower, but they were all still standing with their arms holding a gun.
Yeah, but you can move their heads in different directions. You can kind of lean them forward. You could move them leaning back.
I would say the head, yes, but anything else you would need to actually do like green stuff work to make it make sense. Because like their arms were flat. Like the arm was a flat circle going on a flat circle. So like,
yeah, but you could change out an arm so that it's like he's got the bolter in one hand, and the other hand he's got a combat knife. You could switch out arms and do that.
That's just multiple pieces. That's not changing the pose though.
Yeah, but you can pose those multiple pieces in different places. So that's the difference, is that a Great Unclean One, you have the hand that has a sword and a hand that has a flail. That hand is going to go in the same spot, and it's going to be in the same kind of position at all times. It's not like you can move that hand or you can move the arm as a whole so that it could be changed up to different places or different things like that in different poses. There's a huge difference between multi-part and mono pose. Everything Games Workshop is doing currently is mono pose. They don't do any, because they want to get rid of the secondary bits market. So if you can't pose your model, there's no point in buying different bits, if that makes sense. So that's why you don't have the, like, the bits, but there's no bits market anymore, period. Like, you can go on, you go on eBay to look for specific bits and they don't have them anymore.
Well, the biggest reason there's no bits anymore is because there's no, the choices for what's on your models are almost non-existent now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like they've gone down to strict monopose. There's no customization for...
I think we have a different definition of what monopose is. For me, a monopose is like, if you have a figure where he, like the skeleton captain for Shadespire is a monopose figure. His knee is always straight up on that rock. He always has his spear straight out to the left, period. There's nothing you can do about that. He is in that pose where his spear is in the air, period. Yeah. There's no, that's a monopose.
Yeah. And that's the same thing with the Great Unclean One. Who's the named character for the Great Unclean One?
Rodigus.
So Rodigus will always look like Rodigus. If you equip Rodigus the way that they tell you to do it inside the manual, he will always be in the same pose, correct?
You can move his arm up or down a little, or twist his hand if you want. You can make his hand like go to the side.
Yeah,
but he's always got the same gear because there's only like the gnarled staff he has.
Yeah,
there's only one gnarled staff. Like that's the only thing that exists.
That is a monopose model because you only are going to put on these specific bits onto him, and there's very little posing that you could do with him outside of green stuff. That's a monopose model. It's one pose that you're going to have him in.
So the Puscoil Blightlords would not be monopose because they have ball joint sockets for their bug legs.
Yes.
You could put them in all sorts of shit.
Yes, but that would not be technically monopose.
That's usually just comes down to whether or not it has different gear.
Yeah.
Like
that's the thing is like even now if they have different gear, like let's say you have the what's a good one that came out recently that I could think of? What's the last fantasy big release or new model release for fantasy? Can you think of anything off the top of your head?
The elves.
Oh, the elves. Okay, that's a great one. What are they called? They're the Lumineth, right? The Lumineth Realm Lords.
Yes, yes.
So the Lumineth Realm Lords. When you look at the actual models that they have, they all just slot together. And so it's not like you can even move the spear in multiple directions because it's kind of just in one slot that it slots into. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, you could technically cut it up and move it around, but it's not designed to be that way.
Well, fantasy's always had more of a monopose thing in general. Like that stems from the, you know, need to rank your miniatures,
which I think is actually more beneficial. Like, give me a single pose model for my army. I don't want to spend all of this time putting together skeletons for Tomb Kings that are, you know, five pieces or more than five pieces, six pieces at a time. So I can make like 30 of them all together. That's too much for me.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it makes sense because that's the other thing too, is it made more sense to have multiple pieces and multiple poses and all sorts of shit when you had 40K units, which were, you know, all sorts of different equipment, like the old mega knobs where they were just like, or the old knobs were just like, this dude's got a fucking choppa. This dude's got a ooch choppa. This dude's got two choppas. This dude's got a fucking blasta. This dude's got a fucking rocket launcher. This and like, it's like, is that one regiment? It's like, yeah, it's one unit. It's like, Jesus Christ, everyone's got something different. So like, it made more sense when that was the design.
Yeah. Yeah. I prefer the idea of monopose as opposed to customization. There's some things that I like for customization. I think 40K actually is more benefits more from customization. Like you could do cooler stuff with it because your models don't have to rank. I mean, Age of Sigmar is a little similar in that way, but I think because Age of Sigmar is technically a smaller game than 40K, and there's not a lot of customization actually in your build, because when you're building Lumineth Realm Lords, if you're building the Spearmen, your Spearmen are equipped with spears and shields, right? That's it. You don't need to, and it's not like, oh well, if I give this guy a halberd instead, he's going to do this. He's going to be this much better. And it's like, no, you only are equipped with this. With Space Marines, it's like, this guy has a crack grenade. This guy has a poop grenade. This guy has a pee bomb. You know, right. Like that's it, there's some differences in what you're equipping them with. Or this sergeant has a chain sword and this sergeant has a power sword. But this sergeant has, you know, the dildo of doom, you know, that sort of thing.
I really need to get a pee bomb bit for one of my guys.
A pee bomb? Yeah. It's basically just a
it's just a water balloon with pee.
It's a water balloon with pee in it, yeah. Or it's actually a petri dish that you froze pee in so that you get a puck of pee and you get slide it underneath someone's door and then it melts and then you get a puddle of pee on the opposite side of the
door. I wouldn't call that a pee bomb, I would call that a pee disc.
Like a pee disc.
Yeah, yeah. P-disc. Like, yeah. Look out! He's armed with a P-disc!
Oh, man. All right. But yeah, so all the way back to Blood Bowl. I think I might actually buy into it because the sculpts on the models, like the Empire sculpts for the new edition of Blood Bowl, are the sexiest fucking sculpts I've ever seen in my life. And whoever they get to paint the Blood Bowl stuff does a phenomenal job. Like, none of their other figures look as good as the Blood Bowl figures. Mm. Like you could look, like they have the, if you look at, just look at the Empire team, you're like, holy shit, this is everything I've ever wanted in Empire figures. How come they haven't done this in fantasy? Or they got like Snotlings coming out next week that look so unbelievably good. I'm going to buy the box of Snotlings because it A, comes with a pump wagon, and B, it has all the Snotlings. So I'm just going to make some Snotling swarms for my current, you know, my, sixth edition throwback army I'm working on right now. Just so
that makes sense. Because they do just look like, you know, fucking Snotlings.
Yeah, exactly. And they're fucking amazing. Like, they're not really footballish. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Footbally.
They're not very footbally. So you don't have to worry about that too much. But aside from that, did I think we got all the major all the major news that's worth
all the major news of which there is none.
Of which there is none. Yeah, I've just been talking mostly about the new Warhammer Underworlds, you know, going and talking about the new cards that are getting dropped and everything like that. The orcs seem super duper fun to play. They inspire by throwing chops, so they're very orky. So that's very orky on there, and you get a. They just seem like they're very brutal once they inspire. So like they're the ultimate, like, I'm going to run up and just start hacking at you. Warbands. There's only three of them though, so that makes them kind of a little weaker on that end. Mm. And then you have the witch elves inspire automatically on turn three. But you could also inspire in other ways too, as well. You know, I can't remember what the exact mechanic was, but if you do, you can inspire before turn three if your like hero character starts chopping at people. So okay. Yeah, so there's some fun stuff that you could do there, but they also have a lot of cards that allow auto inspire, so that's really nice as well. So you don't have to really wait till turn three. You can, if you stack your cards right, you can auto inspire. But they just don't seem as good as the orcs, so I'm not going to worry too much about it. They're just pretty. They're pretty elves with snake bodies. They make me feel weird, Steve.
They make you feel things in your pants.
They make me this. I hope these witch elves don't awaken something inside of me. Oh man. All right. So go to the Game Classy Facebook page is the best way to get in contact with us. Considering Steve didn't get kicked off this podcast like he did the last time.
That's true. I'm still here.
Yes, he is still here. Yes, you could go to the Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way you can get in contact with us. Like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. The best way you can help out the podcast. You can also like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTubes. I actually just started putting the podcast back up on YouTube because I was lazy and didn't want to do it before. So now I'm like, all right, I'll get back to doing that.
Hmm.
So, Steve, until next time.
Debate the merits of the monopose versus multi-pose models.
Laters.
Bye.
Game Classy.